Hello, sex fans, and welcome back. Today is Monday, December 5th, 2011, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. Award-winning Seattle photographer David Peterman, who has a penchant for marvelous group photo projects, is back with us today for part two of his appearance on this, The Erotic Mind Show. And I'm delighted to announce that this week David has provided us with a dazzling slideshow of some of his truly remarkable underwater photography. You'll find it embedded in today's podcast posting on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. But wait, you didn't miss part one of our conversation, did you? Well, not to worry if you did, because you can find it and all of my shows in the podcast archive on drdicksexadvice.com. All you got to do is use the site's search function in the header, type in podcast number 311, and voila! But don't forget to use the pound sign when you do your search. And for more of David, his amazing work and vision, I encourage you to visit his website, theyareonlypixels.com. And there you will find a link to his insightful blog. And be sure to look for him on Twitter, too. Today's show is once again brought to you by the granddaddies of male masturbation toys, the amazing Fleshlight and Fleshjack. For all of you who have never seen one of these brilliant devices, let me describe it to you. It looks like a huge flashlight. Thus, the very clever names, don't you know? Inside the durable plastic case, there is a soft, fleshy inside called Super Skin. And trust me, this stuff is aptly named. It's phenomenal. But that's just the beginning. What makes the Fleshlight and Fleshjack so freaking amazing is that you get to design and personalize just about every aspect of the unit you purchase. Now, what other toy company allows you to do that? And ladies, here's a tip. This is the perfect gift for your man. You know how I keep talking about the mutual joys and important information shared when a couple masturbates together, right? Well, this is the ideal masturbation toy for him. Check it out and see for yourself. I know you will agree, nothing beats a Fleshlight. And remember, if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of drdicksexadvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as support for these shows. Now you can help underwrite this important sex-positive effort and jerk off at the same time. How great is that? Okay, on with the show. David Peterman, thank you again for joining us here at Dr. Dick's Sex Advice for this Erotic Mind podcast. I'm sure glad you could join us again this week, because we were having so much fun together last week, and I had so much more that I wanted to talk to you about. So without further ado, I'd like to launch in to our discussion precisely where we left off last week. We were talking about your new project, the Ant Farm, and how you are finding your models. And I hope people in the past week have, you know, moseyed on over to your site and volunteered. So before we get on to discussing erotic art in general and more of your work in particular, let's talk about something really interesting. Let's talk about you. Can you
Ray.
Guess? Yeah. Exactly. Damn it, let's have a whole week went by without talking about you. So can you give us a brief bio? Tell us lots of interesting stuff about you, where you were born and raised and schooled. Are you married? Do you have a partner or partners? You know, the Pacific Northwest is the poly capital of the world, don't you know? Mm-hmm. Do you have a pet? Do you like muscle magazines and gladiator movies? What?
Oh, no. I fear it's going to be far more boring than
oh,
your questions
no.
allude to. Yeah. No, I've lived in Seattle for 27 years,
wow.
which I think qualifies me as native.
That's true.
Yeah, moved here right after college. Went to college in Montana, and most people, they get out of college in Montana and go elsewhere, with a lot of them coming to Seattle. And so I was one of them. And primarily have worked in the tech field ever since, and this is a good place to be for doing that. Been married for 23 years, all of them very happily. And
just to one partner, though, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all in a row.
You're such a traditionalist. I just love it.
Isn't that... the funny thing is, the people we hang out with, we're the freaks.
I know, it's true.
We're the freaks. We're the ones, we've been married for 23 years and just, you know, have our little house and all this. And, yeah, we're the oddities, so that's kind of cool. And no pet at the moment. We had a wonderful, wonderful dog, Rhodesian Ridgeback, who died a few years ago. But we just got... decided that, boy, it's nice to not have the responsibility of a pet. So,
so true.
We've kind of been enjoying that recently.
But, so when did you begin to take photos, and when did the near nudes and nudes begin to show up in your work?
I guess I started having an interest in taking pictures. As I mentioned the last time, we used to go to Burning Man. We went for 12 years in a row. And it was somewhere in there that I started kind of really taking pictures because, what a place to take pictures.
Right, exactly.
And, in fact, for many of those early years, kind of the mid-late 90s, I had a Burning Man photo site that was one of the most prominent ones out there. It was kind of prominent because there weren't nearly as many, and there wasn't Flickr, and there wasn't, all these other things. It was very well known, and I maintained that. And just as that kind of grew, the obligation to do more and more Burning Man photography came about every year. And something my wife and I used to do there was do these projects where we created a mobile portrait studio. We had a four-wheeled, two-person bike that we would ride around on, and I built a frame on the back that I could roll up a backdrop on that. And so we would just pedal around, and we'd see some interesting-looking people and just buzz over to them and say, may we take a picture, and drop this backdrop right down and have this like instant photo studio. It was really fun. But the thing, even better than the actual photos, was that just got us out meeting people all day long, the whole week there, just interacting with people, and that was just a lot of fun. And so I think that's where I really started getting, tied or interested in taking pictures for kind of around projects and doing something interesting with them.
So when you're at Burning Man, it's real easy, one would guess, to mosey on over to a naked person or a semi-naked person and say, can I take your picture? It seems like that's not as easily translatable when you're here in somewhat uptight Seattle.
It's easier than you would ever think.
Is that right?
I mean, it may not be easier to actually get yourself up to do it, but it is surprising how many people will say yes if you just ask them.
Ah, that's interesting.
A lot of people will respond that, I've always kind of wanted to do that. But especially on this last project, I've had a few models who were... I don't know. At first glance, I would never have asked them, but I, said, "Well, what the hell? I will present my project and see if they're interested."
Yes.
And they said, "Hell yeah, that will do it."
How cool!
And I mean, those were people kind of beyond my normal circles and everything, but they were just people who I thought would be really fun to have in the project. Okay. And I have never encountered an instance of anyone being offended or turn around and slap me or anything for asking. and anymore, it seems like now I kind of have a little bit of street. So there's some street cred, yeah. And I can point to these other projects I've done. There's some legitimacy. And it also, there's a good chance that people know someone who's posed for me because I've shot hundreds of people now.
Right.
And so that has helped quite a bit, too.
Well, the reason that I asked that question is that when I used to shoot porn with my production company, Daddy-O Productions, I would try to draw as much as possible from local talent.
Uh-huh.
And I was surprised at the reaction that I got from, and we were shooting exclusively gay porn, so I was reaching out to men, many of whom I assumed were gay, but it really didn't make any difference. And I was surprised that some people were truly offended. You know, it wasn't like I expected them to do it, but you would think that it would be a real stroke, you know, like somebody said, thought you were hot enough to be in a porn movie, but
yeah,
not necessarily here.
I think another thing I'm able to offer people that would be much harder with, you know, like what you just described, is I can let people be completely anonymous
right,
in my projects too.
Right.
I mean, if someone, I mean, I've got people who are, you know, in jobs that were, this would not be the best thing for them to publicly do. And so, but it's so easy, they can turn away from the camera.
Right.
They can obscure their face. They
right.
can
right.
do any sorts of things.
Yeah.
I a guy recently, I removed a tattoo from the back of his leg in Photoshop because he thought, this might just be a little bit too identifiable.
Right. How interesting.
Yeah.
That's
so
fascinating.
But a little harder to do anonymous gay porn, you know, unless you have Mexican wrestling masks or something. But
Absolutely. Yeah. So I want to touch on this just briefly because it's been part of the series from day one. And as our audience knows from our discussion last week, you don't really consider yourself an erotic artist, but I'm going to ask you this question anyhow. And that is, defining erotic art is difficult since perceptions of both what is erotic and what is art fluctuate with time and culture. For example, a depiction of a voluptuous, naked woman in some cultures and even in some periods of our history is not erotic, but rather a powerful symbol of the goddess of fertility. So do you agree with that right off the bat?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't something I've really given a lot of thought to, but the one, I think the really important thing you said in there is fluctuate with time. I mean, the whole considering that fourth dimension because of
right.
just the way things are perceived differently at different points in time.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that just came to mind as I was saying that part was one of the photos that I did in the self-censored project, I think, really touched on this nicely. There was a woman totally nude, but she chose to hold her censor bars over her ankles.
Oh,
because, you know,
well, in Japan, it's supposed to be, you know, that is supposed to be a very erotic part of the body. Yes?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard, yeah, absolutely. And but when we were doing it, we were kind of joking about how, oh, there was a period in time where, you know, showing your ankles would get you arrested.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know,
cool.
So we were doing it like, you know, cover the ankles, but, you know, there's everything else on display for the world.
How
there.
Cool. Yeah.
So. Yes, yeah, so I guess that's my comment. That's the thing I find interesting is how
interesting.
The things shift because, you know, it could be that the stuff that we consider erotic and scandalous now will be selling lawnmowers in 10
right.
years.
That's so true.
That'd be cool,
true.
Too. Yeah.
So as a photographer, I suspect that you photograph other stuff that wouldn't commonly be thought as erotic, or you certainly do stuff that is not nude. So what makes your erotic or nude photography different from your other artistic work besides the obvious?
Well, right now I don't really do any other artistic work besides these projects. Kind of mostly by time constraints.
Uh-huh.
Interestingly, the thing I probably photograph the second most is food because my wife is a food blogger, so I'm often having to photograph her creations for her blog and everything. And even though I know for a fact there are many, many people who eroticize food, I can pretty much guarantee that's not my intent when I'm,
uh-huh.
you know, documenting her culinary creations.
I love it.
Yeah. Okay.
So some erotic artists create their art with paint, others with words, some with stone. But you've chosen a different path. So let's talk about your chosen medium or media. You shoot digitally, I'm gathering, yes?
Absolutely, yes.
Exclusively?
Exclusively.
And why is that? Other than that it's easier?
For me it's easier, yeah. And I wasn't into photography in the film era. Maybe if I had, I would have that affinity for it, right, and that love for it. But yeah, my interest really came up with the rise of digital cameras, uh-huh, and with especially the rise of digital SLRs,
yeah,
and so that's just what I know.
Yeah.
And then I think about this sometimes, especially when I'm doing the underwater work where my camera is locked away in a case that's a pain in the ass to open and close,
mm-hmm,
and the thought of having to get in there and change film every 36 shots would be just ridiculous because I will shoot 2,500 shots in the course of a day.
Wow.
And I can't imagine at all doing that in film, yet I know people used to, so it's obviously possible.
True. And plus all the chemicals and stuff like that, how did they do it? It's just like, holy cow, yikes.
I know. I mean, but we have a different dark room that we deal with now.
Right, it's true.
And so the process is, it does involve much more than the camera. I mean, got the camera, I've got all my software, printers, and all that. I kind of consider it all part and parcel of the same thing. So it's a rather involved process in pursuit.
So speaking of the software, and you've mentioned a couple instances where you do some photoshopping,
uh-huh,
on the images that you shoot. So can you give us your thoughts about the difference between realistic versus heavily manipulated photography?
I think it's kind of first important to kind of draw a distinction between photography that's used to convey like news and editorial things. That
I see, got
it. Where you're counting on that photograph to depict reality. That's like a whole different classification.
Mm-hmm.
But anything else where you're talking, artistic or thing where you're not making any implicit promise to the viewer that, hey, this is real.
Mm-hmm.
I think, personally, to me, all that matters is the finished product. I know some people are purists, and I mean, I have a friend who takes beautiful, beautiful nature photographs, but he will not even crop a photo in Photoshop.
No,
I mean,
kidding.
He wants his process to all happen in
on the front end, like
in the camera.
Wow.
And that is absolutely totally fine. I'm not criticizing that in the slightest. But for me, I really think all that matters is the finished thing that I then turn around and let other people look at.
Right.
And so so some things do go through quite a bit of processing. But also the reality is every single photograph you see is processed to some extent. Even those news and editorial photographs, processing has happened. I mean, they've adjusted the tone curves. They've they've cropped it a certain way.
Right.
Something has happened. I mean, even if you put your camera fully on automatic, you're basically making your camera do a whole bunch of image manipulation.
Right.
There is no, especially digitally, there's no such thing as an unaltered photo. So
that's interesting.
Yeah. So if you're gonna if anyone is going to say that's too manipulated, well, then they're drawing a line somewhere and saying everything to the left is okay and everything to the right is not. And
well, exactly, because I mean, even when you how you hold your camera or where you point it, and in relation to the light source and to the model, it's all of that are thought processes, and so that's going to affect the work, it seems to me.
Yeah, and this isn't new to digital. I mean,
it,
working in a chemical dark room, you make decisions about how light or to dark or to add shadowing and or to crop and all this. And yes, it totally affects it. There's no such thing as an unmanipulated photograph, and so we're just kind of people are splitting hairs upon the degree to which it's manipulated.
So what's the difference between doing a photo shoot and doing a large-scale photo project like the ones you are famous for?
I guess the obvious difference is time. A photo shoot might just be a very short period of time, you know, an hour or so, or maybe a day, whereas the projects span months. With the projects, I have a whole bunch more logistics that I have to work out ahead of time to ensure that I can shoot a consistent set of photos over and over again. Especially, for example, this current project all takes place in our basement, and it's taking a pretty good chunk of the basement. And you know, if need be, I need to be able to take all that down and move it aside so we can, if we need to do something else, and then put it all back in place and resume shooting and have those pictures look, you know, perfectly in line with everything I'd done previously. So I'll spend quite a bit of time figuring out the mechanics of the shoot, how to make a prop or a set piece that I can use over and over again, and you know, it'll give me a consistent look and feel.
So have you ever started on a project and, like, somewhere in the process you've decided, like, oh my goodness, I should have thought of this at the beginning because this would have made the whole thing better or easier? Or
I've not encountered any big reset kind of moments yet, fortunately. With the current one, with the ant farm, fortunately, I did a series of test shots with some guinea pig friends of mine, who acting as models, and I had built an actual five-sided box for people to be in, and then the box I either set on its end or set on its side.
Oh, interesting.
Or horizontal or vertical. But doing those test shots, I learned that I was creating a problem with sightline perspectives. If you can kind of envision, if you're taking a picture of someone sitting in a box from like 15 feet away, which is where my camera was, you see the sides of the boxes. And if someone is kind of back in it, it's very obvious they're sitting in a damned box. And it's a type of thing that just bugs the hell out of me. And so I had to rebuild. I completely took that all apart and built a much more open thing with sloped sight lines. So from the camera perspective, it doesn't look like someone is standing on the flat ground. I mean, it's a little hard to describe perfectly verbally, but like when people come over and to do a photo, if they're doing a vertical one, they're actually standing on a sloped platform that points up at the same angle that my camera is looking at them. If I had if I could put my camera a quarter mile away and shoot with a giant lens, I could put people in a box. But being in the confines of my basement, being 15 feet away, I have to do kind of funky things.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, so what never ceases to amaze me in these conversations is that there's so much more than just pointing, you know, a camera or drawing a picture or writing a story. There's all of this other creative energy that is involved in bringing forth the piece of art, and I think it's so fascinating, and it's just it's absolutely stunning. And to listen to the artists talk about their own endeavors is so enriching.
Well, the other day I commented to somebody that the most important tool that I have for my current ant farm project is the spreadsheet I'm using to keep track of the models. Because, you know, the camera, the lights, the set, stuff, that's all fine. But, you know, as soon as I get an inquiry from someone that they want to be in it, they go into the spreadsheet, and then I track it, like, you know, do I have a solid, you know, shoot date for them, or do I need to follow up with them, and all this type of stuff. And if I lost the spreadsheet, I would be sunk.
Ah, good. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a particular body type in mind when you're doing these calls for models, I mean, right?
For the large scale projects, no. I actually want everybody, because if everybody was the same, it would make the project really, really, really boring.
Oh, that's so true.
So I really try to stress that, you know, all body types, yeah, I want a wide range of ages. I just want normal body types.
And ethnicities, I've been getting, and
Oh, and well, there's where I'm going to have to almost invoke some affirmative action here, because holy smokes, I mean, my last two projects, you look at them and it's like, wow, you have a lot of white friends,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah.
And it's not for lack of, you know, wanting people with some pigment. It's just that, you know, I take the people who respond,
yes,
and send me the
I
emails.
Understand.
And so if anyone out there is listening and they either they have or they know of some people who aren't Seattle pasty white,
I love it.
I would love to have that visual diversity in the projects, because it would make it much, much more interesting.
I totally agree.
So I hope some people show up.
Mm-hmm. So as we conclude, let me just quickly ask you, who are your inspirations? Who inspires you?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I've never officially studied photography or even art or anything, and so I don't know that many artists by name. People are always mentioning things like, oh, you must really like, they'll name somebody and I don't have a clue who they're talking about. I certainly have to give a shout out to Spencer Tunick, who, you know, has done these large, where he gets thousands of naked people together to shoot gigantic scenes. And I've actually been lucky enough to be in two of his shoots.
Wow.
Both happened at Burning Man a number of years ago. And I think maybe seeing what he's been able to accomplish kind of planted into my subconscious that you can get large numbers of people together to take their clothes off for you, you know? And so maybe in some way he has inspired me more than anybody.
Right. How cool. Mm-hmm. No, this has been absolutely wonderful. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed our conversation. I'm just getting to know you right along with our audience. We had that brief conversation at Sandra's party, and I was so delighted that you were so gracious enough to accept my invitation, even though you had reservations about joining us. It was wonderful meeting you and to hear about your work, and I wish you the best, and we certainly will be looking forward to seeing your projects on the wall of the Seattle Erotic Art Festival coming up in June of next year, I understand.
That's what I heard. They moved it to June, yes.
Right. Good, good, good. So before we go, David, would you give us your website address again and walk us around?
Sure. It is theyareonlypixels.com. No spaces or dashes or anything in there. And I hope the navigation is pretty self-explanatory.
It is. It's very good stuff.
Divided into like all the underwater pictures in one area, and then the other photos of just things that don't really fall into any other distinct category. And then if I have a project underway, I always make sure that's up in the top nav, like the ant farm currently is. So if I'm out and I can hand someone my business card with the website on it and say, click on the ant farm, learn about it, and then send me an email and volunteer.
Oh, cool. So. Good, good, good. Can we buy your work anywhere?
No, I mean, really, I don't do any of this for commercial purposes. It's all just a hobby and everything. That said, if someone was looking through my site and there was a picture, like one of the underwater ones that they really, really liked, is what I do then is circle back with the model and say, are you okay with your image being sold? And then if we strike a deal with someone, then I split the proceeds with the model, because, you know, it didn't enter into my model agreements with the commercial end game.
Right.
So,
how interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, again, David, thank you so much for being so generous with your precious time. We are all the richer for the experience.
Well, it was absolutely a lot of fun to be here, so thank you for asking me.
Good, good, good. So until we chat again, we will be seeing you in cyberspace. Thanks, David.
Okay.
Bye.
Goodbye.
What a marvelous show. Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for more Sex Advice with an Edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Fleshlight and Fleshjack. You know, all you guys out there who keep complaining to me about your short fuse, well, here's a tip for you. Being a great lover, being able to control your orgasmic response and last for as long as you'd like takes practice. Sure, you can learn how to last longer by simply using your hand, but now there's an even more effective way to train yourself for sexual stamina and endurance with a partner. Allow me to introduce you to the Endurance Jack. It's just one of the fine designs from Fleshlight. It comes with the stamina insert, which has an extra large bumps and a tight canal. With just a little practice with this puppy, it will help you last longer, gain control over your ejaculatory response, and avoid untimely climax. Once you accomplish this with the Endurance Jack, you'll have all the skills that you need to last and last with a partner. And remember, these fine products are made in the good old US of A. And if you make your purchase by clicking on the Fleshjack banner in the sidebar of DrDickSexAdvice.com, a portion of that sale will come back to us as a support for these shows. Now you can help underwrite this important sex-positive effort and pleasure yourself at the same time. How fun is that? And speaking of sex toys, I want to take a moment to invite you to check out my adult products review site, DrDickSexToyReviews.com. That's right, sex fans. Now you can see what's hot and what's not in the world of adult products. You can even find our reviews of several Fleshlight products. You'll find reviews of all sorts of adult goodies. Sex toys for sure, but also condoms, lubes, herbal products, fetish gear, as well as educational and enrichment videos. Don't miss a single one. Again, the address is DrDickSexToyReviews.com. Until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex, why, that's even better. Over and out.